Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. Meg Meeker joins us for the next half hour of Issues Etc. Our subject, What Boys Need. Dr. Meeker is a mother of four children who shares a medical practice with her husband in Traverse City, Michigan. And she's a fellow for the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute. Her new book is called Boys Should Be Boys. It is certain that boyhood isn't what it used to be. I grew up in a family of five boys. We were talking about this before we came on the air. When my mom said to me, you need to play inside today, that was like a prison sentence. What we wanted to do was the minute we came home from school, drop off our books, run outside, run down the street, and we didn't come home until the sun went down, sometimes a little bit later. Parents had to call us. Now, those were different days. I mean, we're talking about 30, 40 years ago. But things have changed in other ways for boys. Their best friends are sometimes their computer screens or their video games. Not only not playing outside, but society's pressures have redefined what boys are supposed to be. We'll talk about that. You can join us 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, September the 16th. Dr. Meeker, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me, Todd.
What has our culture been doing? Let's start with the broadest picture possible. What has our culture been doing to redefine boys?
Well, I think that over the past 30 years, there has been a very insidious anti-male sentiment that's perpetuated throughout boyhood. I think it comes from teachers, from mothers, from physicians, certainly from the media. And I think that it's very subtle, and often we don't pay much attention to it. But I think that this sort of antagonism that has grown, I think really as a sort of a fallout of the feminist movement in the 70s, has really caused boys to be pushed to the side. We find they're falling behind in school. They're not graduating from high school and college to the same degree girls and women are. And I think that, you know, that's one of the most subtle but the most pervasive problems I think that boys face, which is there's a real anti-male sentiment out there. And it's really, really harmful for boys. I think in addition to that, of course, there's the media. Electronics have played a huge part in reshaping what boys do during the day. You know, you mentioned going outside. Boys don't go outside anymore. Boys, by nature of their the fact that they like visual stimulation, are drawn to electronics, to video games, movies, you know, the internet and computers, and spend upwards of 6 hours a day on some type of computer or television or video game. And that's had a profound influence on boys, how they relate to other people and how they view themselves, particularly since so much of the electronic culture is laced with hypersexual and hyperviolent messages. So that's just a beginning to what I think is going on with boys right now.
Well, you've given us a few, but go a little deeper into the statistics about boyhood and masculinity in our society. You had mentioned education and college. I had heard a couple of weeks ago that for the first time in a long time, the majority of entering freshmen in college are going to be female rather than male. I mean, we'd want equity there, but it sounds as though fewer and fewer males are going on to college. Is this true?
That is right. The percentages of men going on to college versus the percentages of women are dropping. And when you get into graduate schools, professional schools, PhD and master's level, the percentages are even dropping more. If you trace that back, though, and you look at boys in elementary school, boys in elementary school are three times as likely to be diagnosed with a, quote, learning disorder, which we're not even really sure if they're learning disorders or if it's just a cognitive delay in growth or maturity process. Boys are seven times more likely to be diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Boys are much more likely, three times more likely to get in trouble being expelled from school in elementary school and high school. So we see the roots of these difficulties way before the high school level. boys just aren't learning as well in school. And again, I don't think that this is the fault of boys. I think that there's been an increased focus on girls and getting girls to excel. I think that teachers are tired and stressed and have difficulty dealing with boys who are bouncy and disruptive. And I think that we've tried to sort of squeeze boys into the girl box at an early age. And when you do that academically from an educational standpoint, it just doesn't work. And what we end up finding is that, you know, less than half of the high school graduates and less than half of college graduates are going to be male. More are going to be female, and that's a really disturbing trend to me.
I mean, nobody wants to advocate mischief or misbehavior in school, but I'm wondering whether or not ordinary boy behavior that would have been in my day solved with sending you to stand in the hall is now being solved with a recommendation that the kid go see a doctor for a diagnosis of a disorder and perhaps medication.
Well, certainly. You know, there are some kids who have true hyperactivity and true attention deficit. My concern is that the number of kids that I see who really have it that come into my office, and the predominance are boys because, boys are diagnosed with ADHD much more than girls, are really a smaller percentage than you would think. And many times parents are sent in with a boy who's acting out at school, who's not keeping up with his homework, who's losing his papers, so on and so forth. And they come in with thinking that this boy has ADHD because somebody at school said so and are expecting medication. And I just caution parents, before stimulants are given to your son, make sure 150% that your child really has a diagnosis, because a lot of boys who look like they have ADHD can be immature. They can have, they're just slow learners. Maybe they have some attention needs that at home. Maybe they need organization. You know, a lot of boys live in sort of kind of chaotic, unstructured environments when they get home, and this will cause them to really not be able to concentrate at school. Depression can look just like ADHD. So there are many things that can look just like it. And I think that we need to be really careful before we label our boys and medicate them, because it is kind of a quick fix. If you take anybody with even without ADHD and you give them a stimulant, they're going to feel an effect. They're going to feel calmer, more blunted. They're going to be able to sit, maybe focus a little bit more. So just the mere fact that a boy responds to medication doesn't necessarily mean that he really does have ADHD.
Dr. Meg Meeker is our guest. We're talking about what boys need, her new book called Boys Should Be Boys. Before we go to this break with just a minute or two here, Dr. Meeker, and our conversation continues on the other side, bottom line, what do boys need most? Of all the things we're going to talk about, what do they need most?
Dads. They need a dad. They need a man. They need their father. Now, I say that knowing that maybe half of the women listening out there who have sons don't have the son's father in the picture, and that's a hard pill to swallow. Boys, we know, need strong attachments with their mothers. They need more time with their mothers. They need less scheduled activities. They need to figure out how to play at home and to play outside. And then as they get older, they need positive male influence. You know, the teen years with our boys are all about spending more time with good men. And that's why I encourage, you know, mothers, if dad is not in the picture, please find a good man who can help spend a little bit of time with your son, because that's really huge in a boy's life.
We've been told it's quality, not quantity. Do you buy into that distinction when it comes in terms of time?
You know, I used to years and years and years ago, because it was a nice idea, and I was a working mom, and I thought, well, that's good. You know, I'll spend 10 really good minutes sort of telling my son what I really need him to do, and then I'll let the rest go. No, it doesn't. You know, quality comes from quantity, and the more time you spend with a child, the better you get to know them, the more you're forced to work out issues, problems, discipline issues, and the truth is, all the studies show us, kids don't spend enough time with their parents. They spend a lot less time with their parents today than they did 10 years ago and 20 years ago. And most kids say they want more time with their parents. And that's pretty startling, because a lot of parents think, my kids just don't want to be with them, my sons. But actually, the opposite is true. Boys do want to spend more time with their parents, just living life. You know, we never know when the wonderful, teachable moments and the great conversations are going to erupt. They don't fit into the quality of time box. They happen in a car. They happen in the backyard when somebody falls or gets hit on the head or has to figure out what to do. So, you know, the real quality in our teaching time with our kids erupts from just spending enough time with them.
Dr. Meg Meeker is our guest. She's a mother of four children who shares a medical practice with her husband in Traverse City, Michigan. She's a fellow at the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute and author of the new book, Boys Should Be Boys. We're talking about what boys need. We'll take your phone calls and your email on that subject after the break. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. I'm Todd Wilkin. Issues Etc. is coming to you live this Tuesday, September the 16th. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Your phone calls and your email after the break. There's boyhood and then there's manhood. There is what we could call perhaps nascent manhood that forms by fits and starts throughout a young man's life. And then at some point they become a man. I'm still wondering about myself. I heard somebody say, you never become a man until your dad has passed away. My dad's still living, so I guess that still makes me in some sense a boy. We'll talk more about boys and what they need after this.
Better go to sleep now, little man, you've had a busy day.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. Meg Meeker is our guest. We're talking about what boys need. We'll go to the phones here in just a moment. 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Meeker, before we go to the phones, did your previous book, working on this book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, help you write the book Boys Should Be Boys?
Absolutely did, and I really never set out to write a book on boys. There are a number of good ones all written by men, and I thought, well, you know, they know better. They'd been written before. But when I wrote Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, I was overwhelmed by the response of men who came to conferences or wrote me letters or emailed saying, thank you for saying something nice about us. Over and over and over, I heard how men had felt so marginalized, put down, and I felt, you know, if grown men are feeling this way across the country, surely the sentiment has trickled down to boys. And so I began to investigate, and I saw certainly, you know, there were boys who were receiving the same types of messages, anti-male messages, down into the lower grades that a lot of adult men are. And I thought it's really high time that we shine the light on boys and talk about masculinity and how good masculinity is, and to say, you know, the boys' needs are very different than girls' needs. And yes, it's great that girls have opportunities now, but they can't have them at the sake of our, you know, losing our boys. And you know, the old adage, boys will be boys, is sort of connotes kids, boys acting up and, you know, behaving poorly. And that's why I really wanted to turn it and say, wait a minute, you know, boys really should be boys. They're not girls. They're very different. And we need to appreciate them for who and what they are.
Jim is listening in Rockford, Illinois. Jim, thank you for being patient. Welcome.
Yes, long-time listener and first-time caller, Todd.
Great, thank you.
And I seem to have a concern about some of the attitudes, you know, with what you're talking about, you know, along the lines of interest in sport, hunting, and fishing. Mm-hmm. Some would say that a disinterest would, you know, has connotations of, you know, homosexuality possibly. Yeah, I'd like to have your, you know, both your reactions on that.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. It's a good question. There is we don't want to be talking here in terms of pure stereotypes here. How do we avoid that, Dr. Meeker?
Well, I think I'm a little confused about the hunting and the fishing. In other words, is a man not masculine if he doesn't want to do that?
Yeah,
is
I mean,
that
I think the pressure might be if the kid doesn't like to do the typical boy things, sports, hunting, and fishing, then he's effeminate or something along those lines.
Oh, I see. Absolutely. In fact, I go in a lot of depth in the book about the fact that, you know, we don't want to put boys in a box and say, this is how you have to behave. All boys are very aggressive. All boys are going to want to play football and, you know, hunt and fish and that sort of thing. Certainly not. What I am saying is that boys need to have the opportunity to be who they are, and being fully masculine doesn't fit into that type of a box. You know, you can be extraordinarily masculine and love to read and not like any sports, or you can be very masculine and like to do just enjoy the arts, for instance. And I think that that's really the intent of the book, is to free boys up to understand their own masculinity as it is and not as it really should be. It's much more wide and varied than that.
You know, I find that my wife has a better definition of masculinity than I do, because she's willing to let the boy try all sorts of music stuff, which happens to end up being his forte.
Great. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that mothers are a little more prone to sort of push their boys into areas that dads wouldn't otherwise be. And I think that, you know, whenever you come back and you use a word like masculinity, people always think, well, it has to be, you know, just this certain set of behaviors or activities. And it's I really believe that God intended it to be much broader than that.
Here's Kathy. Absolutely. Here's Kathy in St. Charles, Missouri. Kathy, thank you for being patient.
Yeah. I have two boys, and I have a girl as well, and, you know, we have a nuclear family, and you know, my older boy had some issues in school. We had homeschooled him for a while, and then we had to stop homeschooling because the health of his younger sibling, and then he was put into a situation where he was in a smaller, pretty small school, and they didn't really get outside a lot, and it was my concern for him that he needs to get out and move around. Academics are very important, but so is, for boys, the need to get out and move around. Now, you know, because he was in that situation when he went into high school, he knew right away that he was not going to want to go to college and sit in an office, that he was going to want to do something with his hands, something where he could move around. So in some respects, it worked to his benefit, but it was a struggle for him. And and so could you talk about how sometimes in school, boys are often, you know, sometimes made to fit in a box?
Kathy, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I hear that really quite commonly. As a matter of fact, with school budgets being cut and time being cut, you know, one of the first things that'll go are the arts and PE in schools, and this is particularly difficult for boys. Recesses will get cut as boys get older, and I think that this is very, very hard for boys. Any teacher who's taught, you know, first grade on all the way through high school understands that, you know, boys need to move, they need to be outside. I wrote a whole chapter on nature and boys and why boys need to be in the out-of-doors. That's extremely important, and I would encourage parents who have boys in school to monitor how much time they're getting outside and really be an advocate for your son to be able to you know, ask the teacher to throw in an extra recess if he or she can. Certainly, a lot of times, boys who are bouncier or more hyperactive get punished by having their recesses taken away, and they're made to sit in a classroom. It's the worst thing you can do for a boy, particularly a boy with attention deficit. You know, the other option, too, is there's a large movement in the United States now for split education, boys being educated separately from girls, because their needs are so much different, and boys really do have the physical component of need during the day that girls don't necessarily have. So that's an excellent question. A lot of parents have asked me that.
Here is Jessica in Skokie, Illinois. Hi, Jessica.
Hello. I was going to ask the doctor a question about the attention deficit component, how so many people are getting misdiagnosed I'm going into special ed, and I know this is like a really big controversy right now because I know so many general ed teachers, they'll be like, they see a boy act out in class, and then right away they'll tell the parent, oh, okay, you need to get this kid medicated, when they don't always look deeper. Like you said, there's so many things that could look like ADD. It might be another issue that might be untreated because of him being misdiagnosed. Can you expound on those problems?
Sure, Jessica. Thank you very much. Dr. Meeker.
Sure. You know, that's a great question, too. I think it's important that anytime a teacher comes to a parent and alerts them that there's some behavior problems at school or some reading problems, regardless of what a teacher says, you know, teachers and principals and counselors at school can't make the diagnosis. Many of them recognize it, but they really shouldn't be making a diagnosis. Best thing to do is to bring the son to your pediatrician. The pediatrician should give parents a number of tests and forms that need to be filled out. The diagnosis cannot be made in just one office visit. It's very important. You know, if you get a medication after one office visit, I'd find a different pediatrician. I think it's important to work with an education specialist, a psychologist, who will go on to give a battery test to make sure there aren't some dyslexia or reading issues or other learning issues that could be looking just like attention deficit. So in short, any parent who's told that their child may have ADHD, start with your pediatrician. Don't end there. Expect that it's going to take about a month of different kind of tests that your child will be given before the diagnosis really should be given. And then also, if he does have the diagnosis, it's really not appropriate simply to medicate a boy. He needs to have some behavior modification done as well, and moms and dads can learn how to do those kinds of things with the help of a counselor also. So it really is a much more involved process. It's not really a one-shot deal.
With only 30 seconds, final question. You talk about boys needing this sense of honesty, honor, humility, these virtues that that we really all need. 30 seconds on that, Dr. Meeker.
Sure. I really wrote that virtues aren't just for girls, and I think that we often fall short of teaching our boys that it's, you know, how to live honorably, how to live with integrity, how to live with a sense of meekness, that they have this inordinate power, but they're expected to control it. These are the kind of character issues that I think if we attend to in our boys will make them feel like strong men, whether or not they engage in other types of activities, because it's really all about building their character and not seeing how many activities that we can get them into. I think that's an extremely important point of boys that we overlook altogether is teaching of the virtues.
We'll post a link tonight to Dr. Meg Meeker's website on our website, issuesetc.org. Look for it under the on-demand page. Dr. Meg Meeker is a mother of four children who shares a medical practice with her husband in Traverse City, Michigan. She's a fellow of the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute. Her new book is called Boys Should Be Boys. Dr. Meeker, thank you for being our guest.
Well, thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to round off this hour talking with Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America. The National Organization for Women has endorsed Senator Barack Obama's candidacy for president today. We'll see what Wendy Wright has to say about that right after this.
The addition of Sarah Palin gave us a renewed sense of urgency because she's being portrayed as a supporter of women's rights. She's being portrayed as a feminist when, in fact, her positions on so many of the issues really are anathema to ours. The idea that she opposes abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, those kinds of positions are so completely out of step with American women.
That's Kim Gandy, president of the National Organization for Women. Earlier today, now endorsed Senator Barack Obama. This is a bit rare for them. They don't endorse in the general very often, most often in the party primaries. And yet Senator Obama and Biden have their endorsement for a number of reasons. Earlier today, we had an opportunity to talk with Wendy Wright, president of Concerned Women for America, about this endorsement. We'll get to that in just a moment. A little later in the program, Pastor Will Wheaton will join us. We'll talk about third century bishop and martyr Cyprian of Carthage. And then we'll spend the rest of today's program talking with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, the beginning of a four-part series on the great solas of the Reformation. Today we'll begin with Christ alone. Dr. Rod Rosenblatt is co-host of the radio program The White Horse Inn. I talked earlier today with Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America about this endorsement of National Organization for Women, Barack Obama and Senator O. Biden. I began by asking Wendy, was she surprised by this endorsement?
No, this follows their pattern. They have consistently endorsed the Democratic candidate for president. In the past, they have endorsed in the primaries. For example, in 2004, they endorsed Carol Mosley Braun, who's a little-known senator from Illinois who didn't make it very long in the primary race. The National Organization for Women has previously criticized the choice of Governor Sarah Palin as John McCain's running mate, so it's not surprising that they would follow what's been their pattern, and that is to support a ticket that is that favors abortion on demand and very liberal feminist policies.
Does the National Organization for Women speak for American women, or does it speak for as many women as it claims to speak for?
They clearly only represent their own members. However, they do have a habit, which they've had since its founding, of claiming to speak on behalf of all women. You'll note if you watch any interviews with representatives from NOW, they always talk about women want or women demand as if all women are monolithic, that we all think alike, that we're just robotons and follow what they believe. And actually, it's the NOW's claims to speak on behalf of all women that created the desire to have an alternative. Concerned Women for America was begun as a response to the fact that NOW claimed to speak on behalf of all women and yet clearly did not represent the views of so many women and were advocating policies that many women find to be quite destructive.
Let's talk about Senator Obama's record. Is it in fact pro-woman, as the press release from NOW indicates in their endorsement?
Senator Obama, when he was a senator in the Illinois Senate, voted three times against the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, and that stated that if a baby was born alive from survived a botched abortion, that that baby ought to be treated as a human being. He voted against it three times. That shows how extreme he is when it comes to abortion. He's even in favor of post-birth abortion. Now, we know that abortion is very destructive to women as well as fatal to the unborn child. And the best policies would be ones that would reduce abortions like he claims he wants. The best policies for women would be ones that would be offering women alternatives to abortion rather than pressuring them to have abortions and keeping alternatives away from women. So Senator Obama does not have a very good record when it comes to promoting policies that are helpful to women. The same with Senator Biden. His signature issue that NOW trumpets is that he sponsored the Violence Against Women Act. Well, the Violence Against Women Act is a billion-dollar boondoggle for liberal feminist groups. The federal government spends $1 billion a year for programs that are run by feminist groups, and studies have been done that show that these programs that are being funded end up resulting in costs of over $20 billion to the American taxpayer because they promote policies that destroy families, which then causes more cost to society.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about in particular, I wonder if you know about this Prevention First Act that NOW says is one of its biggest reasons for endorsing Obama, given as he's a co-sponsor of this. It NOW claims that it would strengthen access to contraception, reproductive health care, and prevent unwanted pregnancies. Is this true of the Prevention First Act?
The claim that it would prevent pregnancies is that it would require that even more government money is spent on family planning each year. Their argument is that more money for contraception would lead to fewer unintended pregnancies and fewer abortions. Sadly, that's not the reality. The United States now spends about $1.6 billion on family planning. We've been doing that since about 1972-73, and yet the pregnancy rates did not go down during that time period. The abortion rates didn't go down until the government started helping with funding of abstinence programs. So the Prevention First bill would simply provide more of our tax dollars to special interest groups like Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider in the country, and gets a third of its budget, over $300 million a year, from us, the taxpayers, to go to these family planning programs. Well, if you think about it, we're giving money to an organization that profits from abortion. So they're certainly not going to have policies or programs that are going to reduce their abortion business. So the Prevention First bill is would provide more funding to the special interest allies of Senator Obama and Biden.
Is the National Organization for Women gaining or losing influence, do you think, Wendy?
Well, they seem to have really lost influence, particularly after they stuck by Bill Clinton during the charges against him of sexual harassment and abuse. When Bill Clinton was in undergoing the impeachment trial, the NOW stood solidly behind him, even though their signature issue was sexual harassment. So they chose a man who was a serial, who had charges, allegations of serial sexual harassment against various women. They stuck by him and against the women who claimed to be his victims. So they don't seem to be gaining in their membership, but sadly, they do seem to continue gaining in the amount of federal money that gets funded to them.
Do you think that their endorsement of Senators Obama and Biden will sway many women who may be undecided in the presidential election?
That remains to be seen, and the current polling is showing that the choice of Governor Sarah Palin has really drawn the attention of and the imagination of many women and men across the country. So this will be an interesting experiment to see whether many of the women of the United States follow the lead of NOW, or instead they are doing what the polls seem to be indicating, and that is supporting the conservative woman on the different ticket.
I guess a final question here. Does it strike you as odd, not that women always vote for women, but that Senator McCain could have chosen a woman as a running mate here, and that the National Organization for Women, that generally tends to speak for the best of women, will not endorse such a candidate?
Yes, I think it's an irony that they claim to speak on behalf of all women, that they claim to be in favor of policies that would promote women into higher office, and now here is the best chance for a woman to be in the second highest office in the land, and they are opposing her. So it really helps to expose their true agenda. They're not representing all women, and they only represent some women, those women that would pursue policies and programs that fit a liberal feminist agenda.
Finally, what are you hearing from your supporters on the selection of Governor Sarah Palin?
There is tremendous excitement about Governor Sarah Palin, and it's represented among our members as well as the general public. She has really captured the imagination of people. Here's someone who has reformed, has a true record of reform, someone who really does seem to be able to do it all, raise a young family as well as accomplish remarkable things in office that her predecessors were never able to accomplish. So this has been an exciting race to watch, and it really could help to promote good policies that are good for women, and not just promoting candidates who hew to the liberal feminist agenda.
Wendy Wright is president of Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. We've got a link posted to Concerned Women for America under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand and you'll find that link to Concerned Women for America. Wendy, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Folks, you and your congregation can help us defend life from beginning to end by joining the Issues Etc. 300. This is where we're asking 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 in their mission or advertising budget every year for Issues Etc. You can find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at our website, issuesetc.org. Click the sponsors page. You'll even find a one-page handout that you can take to your congregation, your pastor, your mission board, your advertising board that explains everything about the Issues Etc. 300. Thanks for standing with the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Hour two of Issues Etc. is next. Pastor Will Wheaton on the 3rd century bishop and martyr Cyprian of Carthage. And then we'll begin a four-part series on the solas of the Reformation with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. We'll begin with Christ Alone.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.